5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and the Yaker I drive is named Shaolin Beelzebub.
I'm Joanna Robinson, and the Jaeger that I drive is called Basilisk Diablo.
And I'm Neil Miller, and in this war against kaiju, the Jaeger that I drive is called Hyena Prophet.
Do we not, none of us drive the same Jaeger? Like, none of us are in the slipstream together, whatever it's called?
It's hard to know if we're drift compatible with each other.
I think at least two of us must be drift compatible, but I don't want to figure out who would be left out. So until they
we could actually in the new film, there's, well, actually in both films, I guess, there's one that's like a three person.
Oh, yeah.
So we would be like the three, like in the first movie, it's like these Chinese triplets. So that's not us, obviously. But in the second film, it's like three completely different people who are not related in any way. Great. So I think we could drive that one.
Great. The dragon has three heads, and they're all inside this Jaeger that's going to fuck up some kaiju.
Yes.
It's Storm Spoilers.
That's right. It's our giant monster mailbag episode. Our mailbag episodes are episodes we don't have to worry so much about structure because you have written in with questions of your own that we get to talk about. But first, Joanna, instead of reviews this week, we have a very special segment.
Yeah, listen, we don't have any reviews, so we had no other choice but to come up with another segment. So this is me passive-aggressively telling you to write some damn reviews.
That was very passive.
Although, unfortunately, somehow you're about to be rewarded with a slightly better segment.
Better listeners. Is an eye of the beholder, and you're right, that was aggressive-aggressive, Dave. I apologize. Okay, so what we're going to do instead, and I should be marking these because I don't want to make any repeats, but we're going to do an in memoriam segment for our friends who have fallen down. And you guys are, you know, hashtag don't fall down 2018. I believe I am still the only one of this three team, these three person Jaeger.
Oh, no, I have not fallen down.
To have fallen down. Yep.
Oh, you
correct,
the
I have not fallen down.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right, great. So Dave and Neil are still in the running. Joanna fell the fuck down. She might have fallen twice, but she's under no obligation to tell you about the second time. All that matters is the first time.
I have like 80%. Maintain not falling down. I almost fell. So, but I caught myself. It was in the shower. It could have been real bad.
Did we talk about the four? Okay. Anyway.
I don't know.
So this one, I'm just going to read a few tweets that we've gotten from people who have fallen down. I really enjoy it when you tell me that you fell down, not because I'm like, haha, you fell down, but it's a nice communal effort that we're all making. I don't think I read this one from Ewan Campbell, who is at the Hot Beard, but it's from last month, so I might have, but he just says fell down at Storm of Spoilers, and then it's like a long ellipses, and then it's badly, and then hashtag don't fall down 2018. But you might want to look this tweet up. This is great for podcasting. You might want to look this tweet up because Ewan sent us a photo of some ice on his ankle, but then also a beer next to it. So like He was medicating. He was resting, icing, compressing, elevating rice. That's important, but also drinking. So he riced it, added the D to the end for drinks. And so hopefully Ewan's doing much better now. That was about just about a month ago. A friend of the pod, Riley Trahan, I think that's how you pronounce Riley's last name, tweeted us today, in fact. And he said, yeah. snow on the ground, took the dog for a walk, flip-flops because I'm lazy. So flip-flops in the snow is Riley's first mistake. Adding a dog to the equation is just even worse. Pup wandered down a hill. I tried to follow. I fell down. We got another one today also that just says, damn it, storm spoilers today. I fell down from I got nothing at. Yes, it's Gretchen. And then I had another one that I want to read because it had a fun hashtag. So let me find it. While you guys talk about maybe other things that you've seen fall down.
I haven't even witnessed anyone fall down.
Oh, here's. Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I've just been holding on to having not fallen down because I, like, paid my taxes and scratched my car this week. So I'm losing a lot of money, but I'm staying upright while doing so.
All right, this is well, someone claimed to have fallen down while listening to my Scottish accent. I know that can't possibly be true. Obviously, that accent is so perfect that everyone would stand
it's so
erect
uplifting.
And to attention. But last one comes from Sarah Chatfield at... Poliskasari. Nope, I just don't know. But Sarah is the end of your handle, and I apologize, Sarah. But she says, extra points for falling down while listening to Storm of Spoilers. Hashtag icy sidewalk. Hashtag don't fall down 2018. So that was your scintillating in memoriam segment. Please do continue to tweet at us when you fall down, because it makes my day better imagining you in pain on the ground and bruised. So thank you.
Also, to answer the, I guess, question in her tweet there, you do get extra points for falling down while listening to the podcast.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if it's true, but if someone did fall down during your accent, that's really funny to me. Like, deeply funny.
Oh, yeah. People falling down, as long as they're, you know, physically safe. It's funny.
We don't want anybody to get hurt, obviously.
Oh, yeah, but someone who's there and then suddenly isn't. Classic.
Although
classic
we,
comedy.
People have been tweeting at us a few mildly gruesome things, so thanks for that.
That's true.
I will say...
Yeah, no, I'm... I don't know, I just want everybody to be okay. Go ahead.
Oh, this has nothing to do with giant monsters, but I did see the film Game Night this week, which is, I had heard, was surprisingly hilarious for a studio comedy, and it was, like, pretty damn enjoyable. And I just want to say there's a lot of good falling down in that movie, but one, like, really extra special falling down that involves propellers and blood and some excellent line reading from Rachel McAdams. So, you know, go see Game Night if you want to feel better about your track record of staying upright.
Right. It could be worse.
Oh, the podcast about Tremors and falling down.
And unexpectedly funny studio comedies.
That's right.
We talked about
Neil.
Last week.
That's right. We're good. Something else to add to our roster of stuff besides Game of Thrones. Neil, your segment's called We Talked About This Already, where we occasionally talk about Game of Thrones, but then also those other things. What do we got this week?
I have multiple things. First is a reminder that Con of Thrones is 67 days away, right? I don't know. I have to check. There's a little Slack bot that tells me how far. It's either 67 or 66. I will say that we have begun the great brainstorming for the great debates. You guys know that we carried over the great debates into the podcast throughout the year in the off-season tour. But where they began was at Con of Thrones, and they are very lively in person, and they're going to be a lot of fun. And I feel like we have already discussed some really good ones, but I'm not going to spoil any of them because they're not all locked in yet. So just know the great debates are happening. We will be on most, if not all, of them, and you should come to Con of Thrones and watch that and participate. People get to participate in that. It's very lively. On to actual Game of Thrones news. There isn't a ton. But there are a few things I wanted to point out. The first is there is shooting of the Unsullied in the snow, which I find fascinating and will be interesting to watch. I guess that's not really something that should surprise anyone. It's just that'll be cool. Like, Unsullied, snow. We're going to get to see a lot of convergence here in season 8, finally.
I was just going to say, they don't have to worry about their nipples getting hard because they don't have nipples. And then I remembered, no, it's not that the Unsullied don't have nipples.
It's just the one.
It's just that one guy.
One of my favorites growing up in the Midwest in cold areas, and this is super bro-y thing that I've always said, is when I walk outside and it's cold, I'll be like, oh my God, it's cold as balls out here. The Unsullied can't do that. Because their concept of balls is different.
But they can't say colder than a witch's tit, because they do still have their tits.
There are witches in Westeros. I have a Kit Harington hair update. This is with regard to a spoiler that may be going around. If you're digging through spoilers, I'm not going to say what it was, because it's... I mean, it's potentially like the biggest possible spoiler, but it also is probably not true. So, but we have confirmed through some set photos that the man bun is maybe gone this year for season 8. He's back to the flowing locks of Kit Harington. So I thought, you know, let's just like old times, a little Kit Harington hair update. Joanna, have we had any Emilia Clarke hair updates recently?
She's blonde still.
Still blonde. All right, cool. That is all. So that's all I have Game of Thrones-wise. I do want to talk to you guys about something interesting and new and a way that people can support our podcast. This is where I start an advertisement of sorts.
Ooh.
So we've partnered up with the folks at Stitcher, because Stitcher launched what I believe is a very cool thing. It is Marvel's first foray into podcasting. And I've always been kind of fascinated by this idea of like fictional podcasts. I've never really listened to one, but I hear that there's a lot. Most of the really popular ones are like horror stories, right? So like that's not my thing. As Joanna can attest to, based on the movie we saw at South by Southwest together, where I ended up in the field position. But Marvel and Stitcher have combined their powers to present Wolverine: The Long Night. It's a 10-episode story, and I'm going to read you the synopsis. Because if I try to describe it, even though I've listened to it, I will probably get it wrong. Following a string of mysterious deaths in Burns, Alaska, special agents Sally Pierce and Tad Marshall arrive to investigate. They soon find there's more going on than meets the eye. I see you. I see you, copywriters. The first scripted podcast from Marvel, starring Celia Keenan-Bolger and Otto Asando as agents Pierce and Marshall, with Richard Armitage as Wolverine. Richard Armitage of... The Hobbit.
Don't say The Hobbit. Oh.
What else is Richard Armitage in? Quick, go.
Just The Hobbit.
Just The Hobbit.
Oh, the beginning of Captain America, the first Avenger.
Oh, okay. Anyway, he's a famous guy. You know the
great
name.
Great BBC adaptation, North South. Also, probably he's dating Lee Pace, but never sully his name with The Hobbit ever again.
But he was like the main guy in that movie. Anyway, he is voicing Wolverine. I've actually listened to the first two episodes of this podcast. I find it extremely fascinating, in the sense that, you know, we have all of this entertainment in our world, and the idea of sensory overload exists. You can watch anything, you can do virtual reality, but it's fascinating to me to take senses away when telling essentially a comic book story. So to be able to just hear it, they can do some different interesting things. And I think that folks should check it out. And if you go to stitcher.com/premium and use the promo code spoilers, which should be easy to remember, you can get a free month of Stitcher Premium, which is like a $5 value, which, you know, that's cool. It also helps you support our podcast, our currently ad-free podcast. So, you know, check it out. It's cool. Stitcher.com/premium, promo code spoilers. Get yourself a free month. It's pretty dope. I did it. I like it. I would recommend it to people who like comic booky stuff. So, you know, I think it's interesting. Marvel, first podcast.
Berlin Station, Hannibal, MI5, Robin Hood.
Yeah, other okay. Things. Other things starring Richard Armitage. And this podcast. End of ad. So we can move on now.
All right. And with that, we're going to transition into the meat of the episode, giant monsters. Specifically, Neil, you are mere minutes, tens of minutes, dozens of minutes away.
Literal
from
minutes.
Having seen, in literal minutes, Pacific Rim 2, the sequel to Guillermo del Toro's kaiju versus giant robots called Jaeger's movies. This one doesn't have anything to do with Guillermo del Toro necessarily because the script was rewritten a bunch of times. What actually did Pacific Rim 2 end up being about?
Interesting. Wait, that you should ask.
Wait, apocalypse still canceled?
They definitely, I mean, I don't want to go too far into this, but that's still the goal.
Okay.
Is to cancel the apocalypse.
Re-canceling the apocalypse.
And like any good sequel, the apocalypse is bigger this time than it was last time. Everything's a little bit bigger and a little bit faster. And it is, yes, Dave, you're right. It was rewritten by like a billion people. But it comes to the hands of director Stephen DeKnight. Oddly, it doesn't have some of the hallmarks, the hallmark clunkiness of movies that are written by committee. Although you probably could divide it into three equal segments and it'd be like three episodes of television. So maybe that's all we need as evidence of why this didn't work. But I will say, for a big action sequel, it does feel like a direct extension of the film. We pick up with John Boyega, who plays Jake Pentecost, who is the son of Stacker Pentecost, who is Idris Elba in the last movie, who, you know, and so it picks up a couple years later, and everybody is holds Stacker Pentecost up as a hero, and Jake's not super into it, and John Boyega is extremely charming while being a rebel. And then Scott Eastwood is also in the movie. Full
yeah.
stop.
Scott Eastwood is here. That's the best you can hope for Scott Eastwood. Actually, no, the best you can hope for Scott Eastwood is he's not in your movie and you've cast
right.
another handsome man who actually has charisma. But
I will say on the Scott Eastwood subject that there is a moment where John Boyega does an impression of Scott Eastwood's character in jest, and it's maybe one of the funniest things I've ever seen John Boyega do, because he sort of nails the plainness of Scott Eastwood, the plain, like, handsome dude-ness.
The basic bitchiness of it.
Exactly. So it's all about a new threat emerges as they are wont to do, and the threat is sort of an unexpected. The movie, you know, it sort of has this, like, first 20, 30 minutes where it's just all about, like, John Boyega's character just not wanting to be part of this whole Jaeger thing anymore. The war's over. He just wants to like party and steal stuff. That's sort of his bag. But he gets dragged back into it, just like Charlie Hunnam's character in the first movie, I guess. And the movie takes a really weird turn about 30 minutes in, and the villain is sort of an unexpected person. It's kind of a fun thing, so I don't really want to ruin it for anybody who might go see it this coming weekend. And then it turns into just a giant action race thing with giant robots punching giant monsters and in fun ways. So I thought it's a good extension of the first film. I don't think it has as much of like the... There's like I watched both movies today. I watched Pacific Rim before going to the screening. And what's interesting is that Del Toro's world is this very saturated... It's just sort of like... It's very dark and sort of just dripping with color, and there's seems to be a lot of thought put into all of the world. Like Guillermo is amazing at world building, and he puts so much thought into the monsters and the the Jaegers and the city of Hong Kong. You know,
forgets to write interesting characters.
Right. It's funny because this movie's kind of the opposite. Like I like the characters a little bit better. And then the world building is just relies completely on the first film. And so it's just like slightly better characters that just do more punchy stuff. And they do it more in the daytime. And it's really like some of the stuff at the end is really impressive. So I guess it's not bad. You know, it was pretty enjoyable. It was a brisk 111 minutes. I don't regret seeing it at all because I really like it. It's funny. I'm always reminded of there's a time when I was watching Pacific Rim in my home in the sanctity of my safe space with my large television, and a friend came over, or she was over visiting my housemates, and she just sort of peeked out from the kitchen and said, "What are you watching?" And I was like, "Oh, it's Pacific Rim, Guillermo del Toro. It's a big monster movie." And she's like, "That's such a boy movie." And she's right. So I think in the end, like, if the first movie was in your wheelhouse, like it was me, like I kind of like some of the Transformers movies, not all of them. But like a couple.
I really disagree with that. I know a lot of women who really like Pacific Rim.
Sure. Yeah. And I'm not saying this is like only for boys, but it's kind of, there's like a wrestling vibe to it. It's the closest I can get to liking wrestling, which is oddly enough how Guillermo del Toro describes kaiju fights in the special features of the first movie. So, you know, if you enjoyed the first movie, I think you're going to get enough to enjoy out of the second movie that is, you'll find it fun. It's the best stuff, the best like fighting giant action stuff is still there, and I think that's important. And John Boyega is just so funny and charming, just period. And they let him be British, and it's great. He doesn't have to do any accents. So yeah, I liked it. I thought it was good. I thought it was fun. Those are my literally saw it 20 minutes ago thoughts.
Nice. I'm looking forward to seeing it again, because even if it is bad, there's degree that I'm always going to like seeing somebody attempt to execute a giant monster fight in a cinematic setting.
Yeah.
Like there's the interesting thing about Pacific Rim is I think it would have made like an excellent cartoon or anime straight from the beginning, but they decided to go and try to make this a film universe, and it sort of, I think, fails and succeeds because of that. So both the first one, at least, and it sounds like this one, it's fun to watch something that's that spectacle-driven on screen, even if it's not necessarily super motivating. But like, I also feel like it could have gotten away with the simplicity of the character motions of the first movie more in like an anime than it could have in a American blockbuster film. But apparently this one is, you know, rolling the dice on China again. So
yeah. and they destroy most of Tokyo in the movie. So
good, good. There you go.
But actually, there's one more thing I want to say, and this goes to Joanna's point about how it's not just a dude movie. Someone tweeted at me earlier today saying that they're a great believer in what they call the Mako Mori test, which Mako Mori is Rinko Kikuchi's character from the first film, in which it's sort of like it's a movie that has a female lead who has her own narrative arc, which she's not just there to support the male lead. And I'm happy to report that the second film has that as well. There's this very talented young actress, Kaylee Spaney. Really tough last name. There's a lot of vowels in there. but she plays this like 15-year-old hacker, because there's like this whole culture at the beginning of like these people that are like putting together their own Jaegers, because like humanity gets a little bored after they won the war. So there's like no more kaiju. So it's like there's like scrap heap people who are stealing Jaeger parts and like building their own shit, and she's like this 15-year-old girl who's like building her own shit, and she's kind of a dope character, and she has probably the most significant arc of the film. So you know, maybe that's part of it.
My best friend Gail, who I did the American God sort of side podcast with, she loves the first Pacific Rim because she grew up like really loving World War II fighter planes, like with the bomber planes with the like painting on the side with the names, stuff like that. So the whole like naming the Gypsy Danger of the first Pacific Rim and the naming your Jaeger and all of that really, really struck that nerve for her. So that's why
that's pretty rad.
Loved the first one. Yeah. And I've talked to I don't know, there's a lot of women who really like the first Pacific Rim. So I don't, you know, I know you sort of like walked back the gender thing when I sort of said that.
Well, it's entirely like possible that my friend was trying to insult me by calling it a boy movie.
No, I
the
just
more I think about it.
Oh. for me, and you know, we'll get into like specific questions from our readers or listeners, sorry, about specific monster movies. But I was trying to think, like, when you guys suggested this, I was sort of like, oh, big monster movie, okay, like Dave's really into Godzilla, like and King Kong and stuff like that, and Neil I think is into this, and this is historically not a genre that I really responded to, so maybe like I won't have a lot to say, or maybe I'll just think about like why it doesn't, it's not really like my favorite, even though I think Jurassic Park kind of counts as a big monster movie and is the best. And that's a good entree into my like sort of thesis or philosophy, which is that monster movies don't work for me when it is majority spectacle, majority let's watch these big things fight. When it's much more about the human characters and how they're reacting to this disruptive force in their lives, that works for me. And so I think that's why Gareth Edwards' Godzilla, which a lot of people liked, kind of left me cold, because the human character development was fairly non-existent, and he did do a really good job with the spectacle of it. It's a beautiful film to watch, but it left me kind of not really that interested. Whereas, like, on listener recommendation, I watched the film The Host from 2007, I think, 2006, mm-hmm. South Korean movie. And that is so much more about the humans than it is about this kind of silly-looking monster. And I really, really liked that. Or Colossal, which is a film we're going to talk about later in this episode, I really liked, because that is almost entirely about humans. We mentioned this last week, the season finale, I think season two of Korra, which turns into like a big kaiju fight in the bay. But one of those kaijus is technically Korra. So I care. I'm like emotionally invested. So, you know, that's as ever for me, it comes back to like character and human, believable human reaction. And I think the giant monster genre is useful for that, because, you know, as Dave is fond of pointing out, like the whole Godzilla franchise was created as sort of like a way for Japanese cinema to grapple with the specter of like nuclear terror. And so like what is a human reaction to a giant almost incalculable threat, a nuclear threat, and to put a face on it, put like a tail on it, is a way to sort of grapple with it. And I think that's interesting. I just think the films that just make it more about the monster than the person, or more about the monster and the Jaeger than the person, leaves me feeling a little, uninterested.
I could probably see you in that context liking Pacific Rim Uprising a little more than Pacific Rim, but probably not a ton.
Well, I mean, like, I love Rinko Kikuchi and I love Idris Elba, but Charlie Hunnam was a real stumbling block for me in the first one. And I know
definitely upgrades from Hunnam to Boyega.
Yeah. So,
but then we also get Scott Eastwood. So it's tough.
Dave, do you have any sort of like grand ideas about big monster movies before we get into specific emails from people?
Grand ideas about big monster movies?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I like them, and for me at least, they're allowed to be dumb, because the best ones are definitely what you're talking about, that allow themselves to be movies that just happen to have a giant monster in them. But as I don't know, special effects spectacles and different foreign cinemas pick up on this idea of using giant monsters throughout the 20th century, it's like the catch-all of how of the various qualities is really appealing to me. So I think a giant, like my favorite giant monster movies are ones that are seen in succession and sort of like half seen. So like a day-long marathon of every giant monster movie you could think of, from like it came from 20,000 Fathoms up to like the Gareth Edwards Godzilla, I think is great, because you could dip in and out and sort of catch the best parts of the genre. I think it's super rare for there to be a movie that I would say, hey, even if you're not into like this type of action movie or like a mass destruction movie, you should really watch, you know, like Pacific Rim. I don't These movies aren't created necessarily to be that, and I sort of enjoy how earnest a lot of them are in not needing to be more than that.
Cool.
I have a question for Joanna, because now your very insightful analysis has led me down a path.
Oh, no.
Well, no, I'm curious, because I think I know a movie. Did you see Gareth Edwards' first movie, Monsters?
I did not. No, I haven't seen it.
See, ooh. Now, that is a perfect example of what you're talking about, where it is very character-driven, and the monster is, like, barely there, but the specter of the monster is always there, but it's really about character. I think maybe you'd really like that movie, which cool. is even more interesting, because he then went on to make Godzilla, which was a completely different movie.
Aaron Taylor Johnson. Yeah, I because I respect and value your opinion, Neil, I will check that out.
Yeah, that's like that movie just like popped into my head while you were talking. I was like, man, that's a... Anyway.
Cool.
We could do some questions now.
Let's do it. Should I read the first one?
Sure, why not?
Sure.
All right. Oh, yeah. This one comes from Pat. I don't know if anyone's heard of Pat, but Pat is a listener of the show.
Long time listener. Many time writer.
Pod of Thrones fixture. Pat wants
us love Pat.
We love Pat. Pat wants us to tell him whether King Kong is a kaiju or not. Before you answer this, gents, I should quickly say for those who are listening who may not know, kaiju is the Japanese term for like a giant monster. It comes from the Japanese phrase strange beast. So this is what we call, this is what Godzilla is a kaiju. Everything that's not a bot in Pacific Rim is a kaiju. I mean, that they use the word kaiju in Pacific Rim. But just in case you didn't know, I just thought that I would just put that out there. So, gents, tell Pat, riddle Pat this. Is King Kong a kaiju or not? Let's start with Dave.
King Kong, when he appears fighting other things, is a kaiju. King Kong, when he appears as a cross-species romantic interest, is not a kaiju.
What? That's not actually the answer I expected.
All right.
Oh. We've been having this argument.
Sexy King Kong, Andy Serkis, like, macking on Naomi Watts. Not a kaiju. Andy Serkis ripping the jawbone off of a dinosaur. Yes, kaiju. Is that what you're saying?
No, I would actually divide that by movies.
Okay.
Andy Serkis, not kaiju.
Not a kaiju.
Kong Skull Island, kaiju.
Got it.
Wait, really?
Doesn't he isn't he a little interested in Brie Larson?
Nope.
Who isn't? But like,
great. Okay. Neil.
He's there to fight the skull beast.
This is not the conversation I expected.
No time for love, Dr. Jones. All right.
I want to hear what Neil was expecting.
So this is funny enough. This is something that a few of my writers at Film School Rejects started on first in our Slack and then on Twitter. And this is actually what Pat was referring to, is like they've been having this argument about whether King Kong is a kaiju or not. And when they got it onto Twitter, I brought Dave in. It was like, Dave, please answer. Please school these young idiots. And I thought the answer was that he's not. But apparently he is sometimes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So what I said in that Twitter thread is like the King Kong in King Kong versus Godzilla is like floated in on colorful balloons and has electrical powers. And then later on, he shows up in like some German films, like fighting like a robot Kong. Robot Kong actually, like Toho tried to like spin it off. And so there's a whole Revenge of King Kong, at least, that I watched at one point where it's like really stupid. But there's like a Robo Kong and a normal Kong. There's a whole series of non-American Kongs where he's definitely a kaiju, where he's like man in suit, straight up destroying things, fighting other men in suits. But the American version of King Kong like started off as a stop motion Marvel, like in a very simple Beauty and the Beast story that has been updated every time they feel like they have a new technology. So in the 70s, it was a man in a suit, but also some like animatronics. combined, and then Andy Serkis obviously did a motion capture one, and now that they're ready to have him be a brawler again, he's still motion capture, but it's not performance-based as much as it's like action and fighting-based. The Toby Kebbell, I think,
yeah,
did the performance capture for Kong Skull Island, and he's out of the Planet of the Apes school of like battle ape fighting, not necessarily the Andy Serkis school of close-up acting. Not that Toby Kebbell's bad at motion capture close-up acting, but he's not Andy Serkis yet.
If Andy Serkis is the king of mocap acting, which I think we can probably agree he is, Toby Kebbell is the prince who was promised.
Yeah. Mm,
yes, for sure.
I liked him a lot in
Does that mean he has to murder Andy Serkis at some point? That's dark.
I think Toby Kebbell actually, to be really persnickety, actually moves better in terms of differentiating character by movement. Andy Serkis is very specific at his facial movements. I can usually pick out when he's playing a performance caption character. But Toby Kebbell's really good at embodying the physicality of a character.
Okay, but Toby Kebbell do the monster and a monster calls? Or is he a human? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Sorry, just looking up some Toby Kebbell mocap roles. Carry on.
Okay, so to settle this question, though, what I thought I understood, which has been changed very recently now, was that there's like a biological definition to kaiju where it is like a non-mammal monster thingy. But what you're essentially saying is that kaiju is more of a usage and spirit of the thing type of deal.
It's more of a genre of film than it is a type of monster.
Okay.
I would say. So like even like Ultraman is technically part of the Daikaiju film movement, even though he's a growing humanoid robot.
Okay.
So those are still
It's not even necessarily kaiju. Usage, it's like more like of a very culturally specific sort of thing.
That's what I'd say. I mean, Pacific Rim brought the term like into basic usage of the pop culture because they use it in the film. But previous to that, it was basically only used amongst people discussing certain types of films. I don't think anybody would, you know, America isn't using Japanese terms for strange beasts to talk about, you know, Mimic or anything like that. That just wasn't happening. Kaiju was purely like a Daikaiju derivative thing that was mostly like you would talk about it as Godzilla movies or kaiju movies. They were two separate things because that covered basically all of a certain type of cinema.
Hmm. Very interesting. I thought that was going to go very differently.
Great. All right. Since you guys are basically the kaijus of this podcast, and I'm just like trying.
And we are because you've called us kaiju. I think that's kind of how it works.
And I'm just
we're fighting, and we could be giants. Yeah. So like, yeah, why not?
And I'm just trying to be drift compatible. I'm going to read this next email too, and I don't know if James meant this to be on theme for the giant monster podcast episode because I'm not sure this counts as a giant monster franchise, but you can debate that as well. Email from James, who says, do you think the convoluted trajectory of Alien Covenant and Prometheus has put the Xenomorph down for good? Do you think that the David arc can go on to continue and save the franchise, or has David's plug been pulled? So this is like a small monster android question.
He's definitely leaning into the monster part. Of the question.
I just like when I first read this email from James, you know, Neil does a really good job vetting our emails. When I first read this, though, I was like, oh, James is off topic, but Neil considers this on topic. And I will admit that the queen, you know, in all her glory, she's large-ish. So
Neil putting the notes together very quickly. I thought this was on topic.
let's find out what our resident Xenomorph lover, Dave Gonzalez, thinks of James's question.
Is the Xenomorph down for good? No, it's an IP that's super valuable. They will never be able to, unlike a person or a superhero that could be sullied by a performance, much like, I don't know, Jason and Mike Myers and Freddy Krueger. Actually, no, Freddy Krueger's performance-based. Much like Jason and Mike Myers, the Xenomorph's not going to go away. Is the David arc going to actually keep going? At this point, the idea that I get from just a behind-the-scenes production standpoint is if Ridley Scott sits down and decides to make the time to actually make more Alien movies, nobody at 20th Century Fox is going to tell him no. It is going to be interesting to see what happens once Disney picks up the property. But Disney's done like a pretty good job flirting with the Alien franchise in the past. I just don't think we're going to get anything like hardcore horror out of it. But the David arc isn't hardcore horror. So David and Prometheus eventually dovetailing into a not super gory, more action-based Alien franchise is very possibly in the future. That seems like something Disney would want to do. But it's just a matter of whether or not Ridley Scott wants to do it. Or if, you know, he wants to do crazy all the money in the world gimmicks and get popular movies that way.
We're gonna go to Neil in a second, but first I'm gonna interject and say, if Ridley Scott cares about me and my happiness, Sir Ridley Scott, he came really close in Covenant to giving me a Fassbender on Fassbender sex scene. I say we go all the way for some fast on fast loving in the next Alien film. I mean, but more seriously, I do think that Ridley Scott is now more preoccupied with the concept of artificial intelligence, which has always been a thematic thing of the Alien franchise, but that interests him so much more as a potential monster than the actual squirmy, wormy monsters of the other films. Neil, what do you think about this Xenomorph Fassbender question?
Well, this is a point in the episode where I would love for all my veins to turn neon blue and shoot some fire out of my mouth or something, but I can't because I agree with those two takes. Those, you guys are, you got it. You nailed it.
Great.
Yeah.
We all agree, Fassbender and Fassbender for the next Alien movie. Great. Okay, this next email comes from Ryan C. from Melbourne, and this is actually one I can answer. So Ryan C. writes, if you have a second during the big monster cast, please give a second or two to talk about Colossal. That is my favorite giant monster movie and my favorite movie of whichever year that came out. I adore it and love the design on the giant Anne Hathaway monster. I want it as a toy. I'm going to end the email here and go see if there's a toy of it. So first of all, I hope that Ryan C. found that there is a toy of it on Mondo.com. It's more of a maquette. It costs like $150, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the difference between toy, toy and maquette. This is like a $100 difference.
Yes. The Mondo ones, they're very nice. I have Marceline the Vampire Queen, and it's awesome. So they're very cool.
But so yeah, so Ryan's talking about the 2016 film Colossal by Nacho Vigalondo, which is one of the like best director names to ever say out loud, that I saw at South by Southwest last year. And Anne Hathaway plays like a woman with a drinking problem who occasionally...
2 years ago.
Well, no, it was at South by... It was came out in 2016, but it was at South by 2017.
So you saw Colossal the year I was there, but I didn't talk to you about seeing Colossal or try to see Colossal with you? That doesn't sound right.
Maybe it was 2016 it was okay, there?
Maybe. All right. We'll think about that more, but more
let's just talk about the movie specifically.
More on point is this, that like Anne Hathaway plays a woman with a drinking problem who occasionally like turns into a monster, and I mean, that's not quite what happens, but she finds herself sort of...
Oh my God, you're right. It did play at South by Southwest in 2017.
Thanks. Don't question me. And it turns out that movie is just about the male patriarchy trying to keep women down. So anyway, Jason Sudeikis is also in it. And it's a little shaggy, that film. It's not like, I feel like the script could have used like three more passes. But the idea of it, of like monster as metaphor for our own inner demons or what have you, was really fascinating. And Anne Hathaway does give a really good performance. And I did like the special effects. So I agree with Ryan that Colossal is a great film.
Oh, I want to defend its shagginess because the way that movie was marketed, which is why I'm surprised I didn't see it if it was available to me, is it was like the drinking girl who gets drunk controls a monster in Korea. And so you go in expecting that, And as it completes that premise, it introduces the toxicity premise you were also talking about. And it's just so artfully handled that I think even though it feels shaggy in retrospect, I'm still in awe of how that movie takes the audience along with you. I mean, like, sort of like a Swiss Army Man style, where it's like you don't know what's going to happen. Like, literally anything could happen in the next part of the movie. And when the movie, I think, gets you in that spot and doesn't betray your trust, it's kind of special for a genre film.
Yeah, I just think that that male toxicity stuff goes a little harder than, like, I think it could have been subtler and been even better, but it goes just a little harder than it needs to, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If you want to know more of my thoughts on Colossal, you can read a piece I wrote on South by Southwest last year called The Moon of South by Southwest, Take a Licking and Keep on Kicking, that involves Atomic Blonde, Free Fire, and Colossal. I think what happened, Dave, is that you got to South by after I did. I think I saw that like the very first day or something like that. I saw it at the Lamar with Dustin. So I think you got there like a little after me, and that's probably what happened. Neil, do you have any Colossal thoughts?
First of all, now that I have the release schedule pulled up for that movie, it had the strangest release.
Oh, yeah, because it was at TIFF,
it was
right?
At Toronto.
Yeah.
It then played at the San Sebastian Film Festival in Spain. It then played in the United States at Fantastic Fest, which is where I saw it, in September of 2016. Then it went back to Spain for another big film festival at Sitges. Then it played at Sundance. Then it played at South by Southwest in March of 2017. And then it came out a month later in April of 2017. What a crazy thing.
Well, I think the reason it came out at South by, sorry, we're way off the topic, but the reason it came out at South by, I believe, is it's a Neon film, right? Like it's
yes.
Alamo's, it's under Alamo's distribution shingle. And so it had a big, like, you know, there was a big party and like Jason Sudeikis and Nacho Vigalondo were like bartending at the Lamar and stuff like that.
So, oh yeah, now I remember that. Yeah, where was Dave?
Not in town yet.
It's apparently not
we
there
got
yet.
Drinks
yeah.
from Jason Sudeikis. I remember that was at Fantastic Fest.
I actually think we picked up Dave, like Dave got into the airport that night, I think. I think we left the Lamar and met Dave at that other restaurant. Anyway, guys, sorry, we're way
this
off.
This is like seriously one of the great mysteries of our
this is now
friendship.
The second podcast I'm on where I'm the only host that hasn't met Jason Sudeikis. This is horrible.
Is it time to take a break?
But yeah, no, I agree. Colossal is fantastic. We can move on now.
Okay.
All right. Moving on to the second half of our podcast. More questions from you. I'm going to read this next one.
Yeah.
It's long and involves Game of Thrones as well. Here we go. This one's from Caleb, a first-time writer, long-time listener. I love the show and have recently decided that if George R. R. Martin won't deliver a book, I'll just enjoy the storm, though I'd really prefer the books. I just wanted your thoughts on the monster universe that started with Godzilla and Kong Skull Island. Godzilla wasn't bad for monster fights, but not great for the humans. Kong's humans were given a lot more to do. Samuel L. Jackson, John C. O'Reilly, most telling.
That's
not right.
Close.
But I did read what was there, which is why I paused. Though I love Brie Larson on account of her being Brie Larson, and I had an absolute blast watching it. Loved that didn't try to hide Kong, just got straight to him smashing shit up. Where can the series go to be interesting, and what monsters do you want to see? Also, jumping back to my George R. R. Martin comment, I recently heard a crazy theory that he'd finish them, not a rare theory, but that the show had somehow acquired the rights to finish first. I'm certain this conspiracy crackpotitude to rival the Grand Maester of the Citadel Crazy Town, but please assure me, it's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous.
Joanna. There we go.
Yeah, that sounds pretty ridiculous.
Wait. Can I say what I know about this Godzilla King Kong franchise through the lens of what Dave Gonzalez has told me in the past?
Yes.
Yes.
It's like the best game of telephone.
Great. Here's some things I know. The reason that some people are like, God, why is the Godzilla monster, is it redundant to call it Godzilla monster? Why is the Godzilla in Gareth Edwards' Godzilla so big? Nope, reverse, strike that, reverse it. Why is the King Kong in Kong Skull Island so big? And Dave is like, that's because eventually they will fight each other and they need to be of comparable size so that, you know, it's not just like Godzilla kicking King Kong into the next continent. And so that is something that I know that something Dave alerted to me a long time ago is that this is like a planned thing of like, we're going to do a Godzilla movie, we're going to do a King Kong movie, and then together they're going to fight and everyone's going to pay all the money to see it, all the money in the world to, you know, pay homage to Ridley Scott again. So, yeah, that's what I know.
Oh, I can add one thing to that.
It's not Ken,
Ken Watanabe is going to show up and be like, let them fight. Like he did in Godzilla.
Great.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Did Ken Watanabe not die in Godzilla?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
He was standing there watching most of it.
I don't know. Okay.
As pretty much every character in that movie was.
Dave, what else can you tell us about the future of the Kong Godzilla franchise?
All right. What's today's date? Tuesday, March 20th, 2018. A year and 2 days from this very date comes Godzilla, King of the Monsters, aka Godzilla 2, which will take place after Godzilla and after Kong Skull Island, which was actually a prequel to Godzilla. This will introduce Mothra, Rodan, and King Ghidorah as other kaiju for Godzilla to fight. It's going to be a Godzilla Fights More Kaiju movie. And then after that, in 2020 or 2021, whenever they decide to lock it down, is the King Kong versus Godzilla under the American legendary Monsterverse. So that's what we know about that. They're going to be fighting each other in on stateside for quite a bit. But first, we got to go through more Godzilla
from
fights.
From Michael Dougherty, the director of Krampus. Comes Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Okay.
But also great cast. Have you seen the cast for this? There's some real Joanna Bate in here.
I just saw Coach Taylor.
Yeah. Kyle Chandler's in this movie. So, but also Sally Hawkins, Millie Bobby Brown, Vera Farmiga, Bradley Whitford, Thomas Middleditch apparently. O'Shea Jackson Jr. is in this movie.
Zhang Ziyi. Yeah.
Zhang Ziyi is in this movie. So big cast. Mike Dougherty is actually a pretty interesting director. I mean, he did Krampus, but Trick or Treat was really good. He also wrote some like superhero movies, but we don't need to talk about those. Very interesting film. I had more to say, and now I've forgotten. The big missed opportunity here is that the Legendary Pictures Cinematic Monsterverse, which is what they're calling it, also could have included Pacific Rim, like, because that's also a Legendary franchise. So, like, why didn't that happen is what I want to know.
They haven't counted it out.
Really?
From what I understand, yeah. From what I understand, they're going to see Pacific Rim has legs beyond the two movies they do have planned.
Because I would like to see John Boyega and the girl from the second Pacific Rim movie, not Scott Eastwood, fighting Gareth Edwards Godzilla and Jordan Vogt Roberts' King Kong with a giant mechanical Jaeger.
For our listeners who don't know who these like extra Godzilla monsters are, though they are, you know, canon, I'm going to describe them to you. Rodan is a sort of pterodactyl-y type of thing with a little bit more of a bird, griffin, hippogriff sort of quality to it. Do you agree with that?
Mm.
Agree or disagree?
Yes. No, sorry. I just haven't heard somebody who hasn't seen Rodan describe Rodan yet.
And then King Ghidorah, I would describe as a classic George R. R. Martin. The dragon has three heads. It's a three-headed dragon. Right? That's basically what it is. Three-headed dragon.
Yeah.
All right.
Space dragon. Three-headed space dragon.
Oh, shit.
It's like the seven heads of the Hydra, except there's only three. So those are the Daikaiju of...
There's one more that you forgot.
Oh, but everyone knows what Mothra is. Come on.
It's a giant moth.
I know Mothra, so everyone listening knows Mothra.
It is interesting to me that everyone knows Mothra, because I think it's just the easiest, like what it is in the name.
Yeah.
So it's like an easy one. Oh, Mothra, giant mouth. Got it. Whereas the other ones are like, I have no idea what that is.
If it was like King Three-Headed Dragona, then everyone would know what that one was.
They just called them the trifecta.
I feel like two Godzilla movies are begging to be brought up based on what we've been talking about in this podcast. So if I may take a time out for two specific recommendations. The first one would be 2002's Godzilla against Mechagodzilla. So very briefly, this is in the period where they were trying to make Godzilla movies in continuity. This was after America had screwed it up with Roland Emmerich's Godzilla. So Japan was like, we got to do something to keep this up. They decided to have them all continuing. In this one, the new Godzilla fights against a Mechagodzilla. Inside that Mechagodzilla are the bones of the original Godzilla from the black and white version.
Whoa.
And this Godzilla needs to be piloted by a female pilot who sort of has a weird time connecting to the spirit of the old Godzilla, which she names Kiru.
Godzilla.
So basically, it's Pacific Rim, except instead of drifting with somebody, she needs to connect with like the spirit of the old Godzilla inside the Mechagodzilla she's piloting. So that's why that seemed interesting.
Can I just really quickly say, without spoiling, without breaking any sort of trust, I know what Mechagodzilla is because of a movie we talked about on this podcast recently, but I shall go no further than that.
Well,
I'm so confused,
I was going,
and I am.
That wasn't even Joanna. Okay, hold on. When I say Joanna now, you say that exact same fact, okay?
Okay.
Okay. The other movie I want to recommend is Godzilla versus King Ghidorah in 1991. This is the only movie where Godzilla fights King Ghidorah in one-on-one. Usually he has like the Mothras, the Rodans with him, some other monster. In this one, though, the plot is aliens from the future convince humans to go back to World War II, where Godzilla was a dinosaur mutated by radioactive powers, and stop the dinosaur from being mutated. And then they travel forward in the future and realize this was a trap set by the aliens, because the aliens have planted three little dragon monsters in the past that have fused into King Ghidorah. So they have to travel back in time and re-get Godzilla back forward in time to do this time battle with King Ghidorah, who comes back as like a mechanized version at some point. But the most interesting thing about Godzilla versus King Ghidorah of 1991 is it has a weird out-of-place joke on it where one of the American soldiers turns to the other soldier and says, Lieutenant Spielberg, you could tell your son about these aliens. Joanna, now.
I know about that other thing we were talking about because of a movie we talked about on this podcast that I shall not name.
Guys.
And that is the full circle of Godzilla and Steven Spielberg.
I know this is an audio podcast, but I feel like as Dave was talking, my eyes went crossed. Like, I'm that confused.
Yeah, Godzilla versus King Ghidorah in 1991 as time travel and a Steven Spielberg joke and a robot dragon. You should really check that out.
Okay. I would like, before we move on to the next question, I have breaking news about the Godzilla versus Kong movie. They do have a date for it.
Oh.
May 22nd, 2020. They have set a date for it. They actually have a director, Adam Wingard, who did You're Next and The Guest. And Zhang Ziyi, spoiler alert, survives the next one and is part of the cast for Godzilla vs. Kong. So maybe she's the one who gets to say, let them fight.
No, that means that like, I'm 90% sure Zhang Zi is the twins that summon Mothra, or the, whatever the modern version of them is, right? Because you always cast like a beautiful Asian act. Oh, Mothra is summoned by two little fairies who sing Mothra, Mothra. And then in the 90s versions, they're called the Cosmos, and they try to tell the world not to pollute, otherwise Black Mothra will come for them.
Can they do that now without it being weird?
Mothra, as its own character, has two series that were spun off from Godzilla, one in the 90s and one in the 60s. So it's very possible that somebody thinks it's not Mothra unless there are singing fairies that summon it.
I just need to be on brand for a second and say this. The endless opportunity for white male directors is that Adam, like, The Guest is such a good movie. But who watched The Guest and was like, oh, yes, give this man a two monster fighting each other movie? Are you kidding me?
It is likely that they watched The Guest and thought, I would watch a giant Dan Stevens terrorize a city.
Oh, sure. If it's Godzilla and King Kong versus Dan Stevens, I am in. I'm there.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what Colossal is. Dan Stevens, great in Colossal in his brief appearance. All right.
Also in the next Godzilla movie, Charles dance. Game over. So
Game of Thrones over. Ooh. All right.
Game of Thrones over.
This email comes from Cameron, who says, my whole life I have been simultaneously fascinated and terrified of giant sea monsters. Dave, does that count? All right. Yep. But have been forever disappointed in the frequency and quality of that particular theme on the big screen. For the most part, as far as I'm aware, big sea monsters have been left to languish in the annals of mid-2000 sci-fi originals. My question for you three are, one, are there any giant sea monster films that are worth watching besides Jaws, of course? And two, why do you think the category is so barren? Can't wait for the Meg... which I'm
sure Meg
will be amazingly terrible. While Dave tells us what Meg is, I'm going to Google this old sea monster film that I saw. Go ahead.
Well, first, there's a question, which is, does Jaws count? Because if Jaws counts, Deep Blue Sea counts, and Deep Blue Sea is amazing. And if that counts, then I guess you also have to count Sharknado, which is, you know, your mileage may vary, I guess.
Well, Sharknado is a TV release, right?
Yeah.
What about the Shallows?
So, like,
definitely Deep Blue Sea, I would count.
But so is it just like a big shark? Because none of these are giant. Like the Meg is, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, about a very large shark. Like a,
oh, yes.
Like a Godzilla-sized shark.
The Meg has been around in some sort of form since the early 2000s, like 9/11 era. The idea of the mega shark, the megalodon giant shark. I don't know when exactly they were trying to make it a movie, or even that the movie that is supposed to be finally released this year actually is the same movie that's constantly been in production. But there is a Jason Statham, Ruby Rose, Rain Wilson giant shark movie coming out
from
this
John
August.
Turteltaub, the director, like, of National Treasure.
Okay, here's the deal. You say Jason Statham and Ruby Rose, and I'm like, yeah, those two people make sense to me in a movie. And then you say Rainn Wilson, and I'm like, well, what now? All right.
It also has Masioka, who played the nerdy samurai guy on Heroes.
Oh, mm-hmm. I know who Masioka is. he played the character, the titular role of Hero.
No. He's not the titular role, but he is Hero, the hero from
Heroes.
That's
a joke. I know it's not the titular. I know the show was not called H-I-R-O apostrophe S.
Although it might have been better if it had. Who knows?
Okay. My entry into this, and you guys can make this actually dovetails very nicely with a very stupid and insular fight that's happening on film Twitter this week. But my entry is going to be a 1942 film called The Reap the Wild Wind. With Paulette Goddard, John Wayne, and I think it's Ray Milland. And Ray Milland. And it's about sort of like there's a shipwreck and there's like a court case about it and stuff like that. And then at some point, John Wayne, Ray Milland, it's a period piece, even 1942, but set even further in the past. And at some point, Ray Milland and John Wayne get in those like old timey diver outfits with like the big metal thing and all of helmet and all of that, and they go down and they fight a giant squid. And you can watch the footage on YouTube. If you Google Reap the Wild Wind giant squid, you can see it. Does it look great? No. Does it look terrible? No. It looks like, okay, they did some shit with puppets in a tank in the back and like the MGM backlot. That's great. And then there's like a bunch of ink. I always love like ink in a like giant sea monster fight when like, you know, the water gets all black with ink and stuff like that. So That would be my, that's the first thing I thought of when I thought of sea monsters, the giant squid in Reap the Wild Wind. There's also, this is not a movie, but in the Disneyland ride, it was like, wasn't it a 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea ride? There's a giant squid in that also that gave me some nightmares in my life. So
there is.
Those are my thoughts.
I only have one more thought about the giant sea creature thing, which is shout out to the Betty White, Brendan Gleeson, Oliver Platt, Bridget Fonda, Bill Pullman classic.
Yes, Lake Placid.
82-minute romp, Lake Placid from 1999, which is about a giant crocodile. I will say this. I also have a personal story about giant sea monsters. When I was little, my grandmother lived near the Metro Parks area of Cleveland, which is like this, like, yeah, it's like the Greenbelt of Cleveland, in so much as there is one. But there was this weird museum that was always closed, and it was like you would hike through the woods, and then you would kind of come across this like very small museum. And we never actually went because it was, as far as I could tell, never open. But you would always walk by it, and we would sneak up as, you know, like 8-year-olds and like look in the window. And they had to me at the time, what looked like a very large shark hanging from the roof, like stuffed or whatever. And that is one of the formative terrors of my life, was thinking about that thing being on in a nature museum in Cleveland next to a giant lake where people told me it was totally cool to go swimming. So I never went swimming in Lake Erie because I was like, well, if that thing was in there at one point, it still could definitely be in there. So I've always had a pretty healthy terror of things underwater, which I think we've also discussed on this podcast before.
Well, what's funny is the host, you know, which, as I said, I watched today at the suggestion of a listener, the poster for the host is like, you know, a girl caught in like what looks like a giant tentacle. I thought that was a tentacle monster movie. Turns out that was that monster's tail, and that monster design is like, it's fine. It's not offensively bad. It's not super great. It's like a premium quality ass blaster design is what that monster is. But I definitely thought it was just like tentacles coming out of the water. And I was like really excited about that. I thought it was just like tentacles will grab you, the host. Stay away from the shoreline, the host. That's not what the host is, but it was still a great movie.
So. Right, right. It's more like monster chasing you through a park. The host.
Yeah, the host.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Can we shout out the funeral scene in that movie?
Oh my God, where they're like rolling around on the ground.
Where they're just crying hysterically. Like it's one of those scenes that's like supposed to be sad, but the way they do it, it's one of the funniest things in a monster movie.
But once you see Snowpiercer and Oakja, like that's kind of his tone.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
That's his brand of humor is like, we shouldn't be laughing at this, but it's really funny.
Yeah. Dave, do you have any large sea monster thoughts?
I mean, I think you guys named most of the good ones. The reason why it's so difficult is because so many good monsters come from the sea. So, like, there's good stuff of Godzilla being in the sea. There's good stuff of the creature from the Black Lagoon that's actually shot underwater. But I wouldn't classify those as like giant sea monster movies. Gorgo has some stuff in the sea, I think, from like 1961. That's good. But I think, if Jaws counts, then Neil's right. Deep Blue Sea counts, and that's definitely the one I would pick.
A fucking shark ate me!
I just want you guys to like
Deep Blue Sea. His hat was like a shark's fin.
I don't know what's going on in our show notes at the moment. These are all the reasons why I'm never going into the ocean.
I'm just putting screen grabs from Reap the Wild Wind, so you know that it doesn't look that bad. It looks kind of good, right?
It's vibrant and terrifying, and
it looks
kind of
good in action too. Like it doesn't look like shitty puppetry. It's like I don't know. They like the tentacles look like they could wrap around and grab you.
What year is this movie from again?
1942.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't know. All right.
Wow.
Our last email comes from Shane, who listens to us with his fiance while they meal prep, which, and this is an editorial note from Neil, is adorable.
it's mostly adorable because my housemates also do that together. They like listen to podcasts and meal prep for the week, and I find that adorable. So it's just an adorable thing to do. there, Shane.
Shout out to Theo and Kim. All right. Which monster do you think is the most destructive to mankind, Shane asks. Then if they weren't fighting off human armies or other monsters, which creature do you think would wreak the most havoc on planet Earth? I was about to say like a dragon, but Godzilla
like
also
rain of fire dragons.
Well, they eat ash. But like Godzilla also sometimes has like fire breath, right, Dave?
Yes, yes.
And whatever it is, it's like big. It's got a tail. It would be great if it could fly, and fire breath. Those are like the three things that I think combine make the most destructive force for humankind. Godzilla can't fly, so maybe it is the dragons. What do you think, Neil?
Well, this is a total cheat because I literally just watched both of these movies back to back before we podcasted. But I think it's the kaiju from Pacific Rim for two reasons. One, they come in many shapes, sizes, and with different abilities. And two, the ultimate kaiju plan of destruction in the second movie is really specifically horrifying. And that's as far as I'm going to go with that. You kind of have to see it. That's one of the fun parts of the movie is like when they finally figure out what the kaiju are trying to do, it's like, oh, shit, that would work and would be awful. So,
this episode of Storm of Spoilers brought to you by Pacific Rim 2. Pacific Rim 2, you got to see it to believe it.
Yeah, sorry for the vague answer, but trust me on this one. It's gnarly.
All right, Dave?
So I'm going to do the second part first. If they weren't fighting off human armies or other monsters, which creature do you think would wreak the most havoc on planet Earth? Would be Meltdown Godzilla from Godzilla vs. Destoroyah, where eventually they have to cool him down just so it's a tiny explosion. But if he were to melt down at his full reactor heart level, he would like burn a hole in the Earth to the core and then like fuck up the Earth's core. So that I think is pretty destructive regardless of mankind, just because he's melting down and dying.
He's like Godzilla, the nuclear bomb.
Yeah. Which monster do I think is the most destructive to mankind? You know what I liked a lot about the Gareth Edwards Godzilla is the monsters that had naturally developed an EMP despite not coexisting with humans. Oh, yeah. I think that's an interesting idea if you were to have a giant monster that was designed to cause the most destructive human path. So I think maybe the Mudos, just even though they make no sense in the movie they're in.
Sometimes they fuck. It's okay. Okay.
That's hot.
I need to go back to this Godzilla naming other monsters questions. All right. Okay. Here's how I think it went. Okay. They're like, oh, what if we do a three-headed dragon? Great. Let's call it King Ghidorah. Ooh, that sounds cool. King Ghidorah. All right. Oh, we're going to do this like hippogriff pterodactyl thing. Rodan. Ooh, that's fun. It kind of like evokes a sculptor. That's a really fun. I like that. Okay. How about this giant moth? I'm getting kind of tired. I need a nap. I'm a little lazy. Mothra. It's a moth. We're going to call it Mothra. All right, we got one more. What does it do? It destroys things. Destroya? Does that work for you? Great. Destroya. Let's call it a day. Home by five. Done. They called it Destroya after they've named another monster King Ghidorah for no reason? Come on.
Destroya with an H.
Destroya, by the way.
He's the ghost face killer of monsters.
Destroya is sort of like a triceratopsy, like hefty armored winged Godzilla creature. Am I there?
Oh, well, it depends on what stage of Destroya you're looking at as you Googled him, because he comes in three.
Oh, wait, there's like a scorpion one.
Yeah, the scorpion one.
And there's a flying
one. The scorpion
one
is like a car size, so he like attacks a girl who's like in a car and like ripping doors off. It's pretty sweet. But then the giant one's just like this huge flying chunk of barely a person in a suit.
Kind of looks like
pretty chunky. It's not like a ooh, yeah, a little gremlin-y. It's not like a sleek flying machine. Like this it's like thunder thighs of the monster.
He kind of looks like the top half is a gremlin and the bottom half is from that TV show Dinosaurs.
Oh, remember that TV show? I do. I'm the baby. Gotta love me. Great. Nailed it. Destroy it.
This is what the people wanted when they...
Half gremlin, half dinosaur from the TGIF show Dinosaurs. All right.
Yep.
And that isn't even the one that was made up by like a fan contest. That was Biollante, the like plant Godzilla hybrid.
I mean, obviously, everyone knows that.
Destroya was people thought about. People got paid to come up with that name.
All right. Shane asked another question that Neil did not include in here, but I'm just going to go out with this one. I think, if memory serves. Shane also asked, which two monsters would you most want to see fight? I think we should start with Dave, who has probably spent the most time thinking about this.
King Kong and 100 6-foot-tall Cloverfield monsters.
Okay.
That went a specific direction.
I was thinking about...
No, I'm glad you brought up Cloverfield, because we haven't really...
Oh, yeah, Cloverfield. That one. I would like to see the three-headed dragon guy fight the Destroya. With
King Ghidorah.
Yeah.
I believe you meant King Ghidorah.
King Ghidorah and the Destroya. But set to the theme song from the TV show Dinosaurs.
Great. Great, great, great. All right. I think I would like to see Kaiju Korra versus... yeah, something with a lot of tentacles. No, but like that's what we already saw.
The monster from The Host.
That thing doesn't. That's deceptive. Deceptive tentacles. Kaiju.
Right. It's
Kaiju Korra versus. We're allowed to do like a bunch of little ones. Like.
Well, like I was just making. Sure, yeah.
Like
sure.
Like Dave just said,
I feel like this is going to end with some weird anime stuff. It's like,
yeah. Okay.
Korra versus 30, the tentacle monster.
30 raptors versus Kaiju Korra. The end.
Or maybe the monster from Guardians of the Galaxy 2. That was a giant tentacle monster.
That's a giant tentacle monster.
And he had like sweet like neon breath.
Oh,
yeah, if you're
going to
have
opening.
Fire breath, make it neon
yeah,
lights.
The opening
sure.
scene of Guardians 2.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, crank up the yellow. Baby Groot, start dancing. Because here comes Kaiju Korra versus the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 squid tentacle monster. The
cool.
End.
Sounds perfect.
Yep.
Great.
All right, we did it, guys. We solved giant monsters. Just in time for Pacific Rim 2 to hit theaters this
but
week.
Now I want to see Pacific Tim. A guy named Tim. He's like in IT, I think. He gets hit by a radioactive blast.
Played by Chris O'Dowd.
Yes.
And has to defend the Pacific coast from giant monsters.
The first thing that came to my mind when you said that, though, Pacific Tim, was Tim the Toolman Taylor. Which makes it even weirder. He's just like,
I was about to ask if anyone was going to do an impression, and then you just did it. It was great.
Yeah, no, you just got to go for it.
Oh my God, Pacific Tim versus Mega Wilson.
And there's just a giant fence.
Yep.
Yeah, Trump people. Yeah,
let's
love
do it.
It.
Let's reboot Home Improvement. Why not?
Oh boy.
All right. So next week we're going to reel it in a little bit, maybe. Neil, what do we got going on?
Next week we're going to do another filmmaker focused episode. We are doing a Wes Anderson episode because in addition to Pacific Rim 2 this weekend, Wes Anderson's new film Isle of Dogs begins its release. I don't know if it's a wide release. I have not had a chance
limited.
To look that up.
Limited.
Limited. It's opening here in Austin, so I'm going to see it. So yeah, we're gonna talk Wes Anderson movies. So if you have thoughts on Wes Anderson movies, like The Grand Budapest Hotel or Moonrise Kingdom, or specifically Fantastic Mr. Fox and Isle of Dogs, or Life Aquatic, which I think is still my favorite. For me, it's a tie. But we'll talk about that next week. But we'll talk about Wes Anderson's films, his...
Or the empirically best one, Royal Tenenbaums.
Oh, shots fired. We'll talk about Wes Anderson's pastiche. Maybe we'll talk about some of his commercials, which I found very funny. And yeah, we'll put on our dapper clothing. Yeah.
Break out the yellow font.
Break out the sepia tone.
Put on a bucket hat. Here comes the Wes Anderson episode.
We'll get Bill Murray and Saoirse Ronan together. And,
how do you say her name?
Saoirse.
Yeah, last name?
Ronan.
No, but
is that not how you do it?
Well, you nailed Saoirse, which is the hard part. And then you like really Frenchified her last name, which is Ronan. But you said Ronan.
Is it?
Which was fun. I'm pretty sure. Okay. But hey, this
you know
is
what? As part of the homework for next week,
yeah,
we will look this up because I'm pretty sure there's a Vanity Fair video where she explains how to say her name.
So, ooh, and she's like, if you want to be real Irish, it's Ronan. All right.
Yeah, that's like real synergy there.
I will drink something disgusting if I'm wrong.
Well, if you say something contrary to what Vanity Fair says, the light in your palm starts blinking and you have to report the execution center. Until next week, let's figure out why I made that joke by finding out where we could find more Joanna Robinson on the internet.
You can find me at vanityfair.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
Get me over at filmschoolrejects.com, where at some point, probably by the time this goes live, I will have reviewed Pacific Rim 2 in full. And, you can also follow me on the Twitter at Rejects. And don't forget to follow at Storm of Spoilers and send us a fun email, stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me tweeting at DA7E. I've also pinned to the top of my profile there my Infinity War thoughts, of which they are mostly about stones.
Really?
Yes, indeed.
See that coming.
If you want to know. Stones, if you want to know spoilers. What I think about the stones. But yeah, until next week's Wes Anderson episode, continue to not fall down.
Your hand on his arm, a stacked charm around your neck, strung out and thin, calling some friend, trying to cash some check. He's acting dumb, that's what you've come to expect. Needle in the hay, needle in the hay, needle in the hay, needle in the hay.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.